we were going through the seven diamond visions, and what was it? We finished two, I think. What's the third one? No, we only finished one. What's the second one? Yeah, Dharma Jewel. Okay, so we're on Chokoin Jewel. I'll just put it up here so you remember what we're talking about. Is that okay for your camera? Yeah. Say Chokoin Jewel. Chokoin Jewel. Chö means Dharma. Koin Jewel means Ratna. Jewel. So Dharma Jewel. Debu Koin Jewel or Gyu Koin Jewel? Mr. Brian. Result refuge or causal refuge? Yeah, going for refuge to the Dharma jewel that you're going to achieve. That's, he did Ayupengo, but the first three of the seven diamond visions are referring to the three jewels, but with reference to what you're going to become yourself, right? So, result refuge, right? Going to refuge in the result is how I remember it, in what I'm going to become, okay? So, tonight we're going to talk about how you will become one of the three refuges. Actually, you become the Chigila. When? Two of the three refuges. When you see emptiness directly. Okay? When you see, the moment you see emptiness directly, you become the, which two of the three jewels? That's easy.
The Dharma Jewel and the Sangha Jewel.
Yeah, Dharma Jewel and Sangha Jewel. Okay? You become. And I just always thought it was cool, because there's still, even with all the political problems that Buddhists have in the world, there's still millions of Buddhists who get up every morning and say, you know, Buddha gacchami, Buddha saranam gacchami. Yeah. And then it's kind of cool to think that when you reach that, then they'll be, whether they know it or not, they're going to refuge to you. So it's kind of cool. But your Chökoin Jewel is a state of mind. These are things in your own mind, okay? Certain levels that you've reached in your own mind. And as we're going to see later today, it's two of the four so-called noble Arya truths, okay? You get two of the four noble truths in your mind, and that makes you Chökoin Jewel, okay? The direct perception of emptiness also means that you have two of the four noble truths in your own mind. So I thought it might be good to go over the four noble truths while we're at it, the four Arya truths. Because they come in the fourth chapter of the Uttara Tantra. So what I did was I just stole that whole section out of the fourth chapter and brought it to the first chapter. So we're going to do a review of the four truths, and then we're going to see how you become two of them, or how you achieve two of them to become the jewel of the Dharma. Okay? So I thought we'd go over the four truths. It's a very, very famous verse from the Uttara Tantra. Like, I'm trying to pick the 10 most famous verses from the Uttara Tantra, the ones that you'll hear all the time in the debate ground and things like that. And the more I do of this kind of work, I see that the Lam Rim is based heavily on the Uttara Tantra, although it doesn't mention it much, okay? So I think you'll recognize a lot of what I'm going to say even now, but now you know where it comes from, okay? So we're going to discuss the first of the four Arya truths, okay? Called Arya truths because Mercedes? Yeah. Good. In Jeto Byeshe, in the hours following the direct perception of emptiness, an Arya has four, or you can call it four extraordinary realizations, four groups of extraordinary realizations consisting of 16 sub-realizations consisting of lots of others' realizations. But anyway, you can group them all into four, and those are called the four Arya truths, because an Arya is someone who has seen emptiness directly. So noble is a mistranslation. Noble is a bad translation of the Sanskrit word Arya, or Pakpa in Tibetan. So which is the first of the four noble truths? David Stump.
Suffering.
Sure? I said, like, that's the way to stop again. You sure? First of the four noble truths. First of the four Arya truths. Yep? I don't know if it's in course number two. Is there any other order to the four noble truths? I mean, traditional order is what you said, which is suffering. You see suffering, then you want to see You want to find out
suffering, cause of suffering,
what caused it.
Suffering, how to end it.
You want to see if you can end it, and then you want to see how to end it. So that's what we call like cause. That's what we call realization order. You see that the world is suffering. You want to figure out why it's happening. You decide that you could stop it, and then you figure out how to stop it. But there's also what they call the actual order. Do you know? Which is what?
Yeah.
The order in which they really occur. Yeah, first the cause of suffering, then suffering itself, then you follow the path, and then you get to the end. So there's a debate in the scriptures, you know, which order are you going to follow? Tonight we're following Mr. Stump's order. Okay, so it's first would be what? Yeah. It's a K, right? Say Dunya.
Dunya.
Oh, wait till you finish, right?
Demba.
Dunya.
Dunya.
Demba.
Demba.
And I think, and it's like a review for most of you, but you know that four truths doesn't mean a principle, okay? It doesn't mean like the four principles or something like that. It means four realities, four real things. Like this is Dunya Demba. This is the truth of suffering, okay? My body is the truth of suffering. This is the truth of suffering. This is the truth of suffering. Everything in a normal person's world is the truth of suffering because it's been created by their own karma and negative emotions, kleshas, okay? So it's not like the truth of suffering is a principle. It's a fact in the sense of the things which constitute that fact. So it's not just going around saying everything is suffering. That's true, and that's a truth. But that's not what Dunya Demba is. Dunya Demba is all the stuff which is actually suffering, which is everything which has been produced by negative emotions and karma, bad karma. Okay. Then in the Uttara Tantra, in the fourth chapter, I'm skipping to the fourth chapter, Maitreya says, say Neni,
Neni.
Shija.
Shija.
Neni,
Neni.
Shija.
Shija.
Neni means Chugila had it this afternoon.
I knew this was coming.
Disease, illness, sickness. Okay? This Ni is what we call an equational sentence, which means is in. It just means it's a pointer. You know, sickness, I mean, in English you just point your finger, but in Sanskrit and Tibetan it's the is. Sickness is the Shija. Shija. What's Shija? It's the name of a Tibetan newspaper in Dharamsala, Shija. Which means what? Noble things. They call the newspaper noble things, you know. Things to know about. But what it means here is, this Ja is the imperative. You must grasp suffering. You must grasp that you have that disease. Okay? Must grasp the disease. Okay? And I think when you're teaching in the Muse, what's it called? What's the fancy name of that YMCA?
Muse.
Tucson School, Tucson's
Center for the Arts.
Okay. Which it is kind of like that. But anyway, when you're teaching people, I think that's kind of why I put the four Arya truths at the beginning of this lesson, although you've already had them. I think especially if people walk in or new people from out of town or something like that, you got to be able to go over the four Arya truths before you get into why two of them are the Dharma jewel. Okay? So you got to have the four Arya truths on your fingertips like that. And the way the Uttara Tantra presents the four Arya truths is just by saying, look, you got to understand that you're in trouble. You have to grasp that there's a problem here. And that's the big crux for 99% of the people, you know. I can tell you a horror story for every person in this room. You know, the ones that I know personally, the ones who stuck it out, the ones who've made it here, the ones who are very clear on what they want to do, and the ones who are very clear about their practice and everything else, with every single one of them, there's been some kind of disaster. Like, they got the wake-up call 10 years ago, 5 years ago, 20 years ago. Some, usually a death, but sometimes an accident or an illness or something like that. And the first Arya truth is just, you've got to understand that this is happening. You must understand that this is going on. when you see emptiness directly and you come out, then part of the day is spent grasping how hopeless everything is for almost everybody. You know, that everything is hopeless. The odds of really pulling off in this life, of pulling off the Buddhist path in this life, all the way up to Dzogchen, and then beyond, higher tantric practice, is almost impossible. It's almost totally impossible. So, I mean, if you really grasped how impossible it was, just the world would make you crazy. It's as if the World Trade Center thing was happening every half hour, everywhere. You know, like people got a little taste of it. I saw the video. They sent me a video from New York City of some of our students. And they all have this, to me, you know, not having been there, not having seen, I still haven't seen any of the videos or the pictures. I've just heard things. But to see their faces, I can feel it. I can see it in their faces, you know. And this is like a couple years later, right? But I can see some kind of a doubt or some kind of a, something broken in their faces. I don't know if you can see it because you know, the way you had the same experience, you see. We didn't. We were just sitting there and we didn't. But to see their faces is very sad in a way. And I think, the you know, obviously the increased interest in religion, all religions in this country, is a direct result. I mean, somebody has grasped the disease. Somebody has grasped what's really going on. And I think, again, one of the things about retreat was realizing how vulnerable you are, realizing how little security we all have. Because in a retreat, you're purposely putting yourself into a place of no security to get straight down to the bottom of your mind. And people ask me, why did you pick Arizona? Why did you pick such a hot place? Why did you stay in such a crummy yurt? You know, why did you blah, 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 with rattlesnakes all around? You know, well, the point is to... I mean, really, if you get really serious about retreat, I'm not suggesting it immediately for everybody, but when you're up to a certain level, you should expose yourself to a lack of security. And then you get straight down to what's real. And that's that we're all sick. We all have some disease. And if we don't act quickly, then there's no chance. So you guys are faced, I think the most important thing you have to say to people, maybe, who walk into your class in Tucson is to get them to feel this statement by Maitreya, you know, that you must grasp that there's a problem and that we have very little time to deal with it. And then coming out of retreat, you know, we're on the web all day, we're using computers all day, we spend all day trying to get our computers to work on the web. And then we don't have time to do anything else. But that's supposed to be important somehow, and saving us time somehow. You know, it's very funny. I mean, away from it for 3 years, you can see it's kind of ridiculous. I'm sure in 3 months I'll think it's a very important thing. But, or maybe 3 days, but it's really funny. We don't have time to do much of that. I mean, we have to do a certain amount to get readings out and stuff like that. But on the whole, there's no time for those things. We don't have time for those things. It's just study what you need to study, serve others, but make sure your practice is going well. Make sure you do what you can do to see emptiness. And then the rest is superfluous. So you have to know about the disease. I think very important to... You have to talk about that to the people you teach in October. Because that's really what... That's really why any single person walks in. Down at the bottom, there's some kind of feeling that something's wrong. Say kunjung,
denpa.
Kunjung,
denpa.
Kun means everything. Jung means comes from. And kunjung means the source of all things. The source. Denpa means truth. Truth of the source of suffering. And I put all these in the Sanskrit also, but I'm not going to do it because we don't have time. So if you want to know the Sanskrit, Christy Fah will go over it with you on Saturday. But the Sanskrit here is hetu, which just means cause of suffering. The truth of the cause. Say ne ki gyuni pangja. Ne ki gyuni pangja. Ne means sickness, ki means of, Gyu means cause. Ni here means is. Bangja means you must eliminate it. You must stop it. You must cut off the cause of suffering. I always think of it like, you know, sometimes when you're taking a shower, which is such a nice thing, and you hit the water thing and you turn off the cold water, and then suddenly it's like 200 degrees hot water. And there's two approaches you can take then, you know. One is you can take your hand and hold it up to the head of the shower and try to stop the water. And you'll just burn yourself, you know. And the other is, you know, if you can think, is just to turn it off. And that's the difference between ne and naked gyu. You know, we don't try to stop suffering as it comes out. It's too late. It's too late, okay? You got to get to the source, pangja. That's the beauty of Buddhism. I mean, that's the great secret of Lord Buddha's approach, you know. You don't try to stop events after they're already happening. It's too late. It's what we call hard concrete, right? It's too late. Concrete's already hard. And, you know, you've been, the whole world is trying to deal with their current pain by using methods that would address it in the current moment, and they fail. Every single one fails. The whole world is trying to achieve some kind of minimum comfort before they die, right? And they're trying to work in such a way that whatever they do right at this moment would stop what they don't like at this moment, and that's impossible. According to Buddhism, that's just impossible. You have to go to the source. You have to stop the source, and then slowly the suffering will stop. Okay. And there's a sort of a tracing back to the source, right? You go to the person you met at work that you don't like, and then you trace it back to some kind of negative karma that you're collecting, and then you trace that back to some wrong way in which you're looking at things, and then you trace that back to the habit of looking like that, and then you trace that back to the seed that you came into this life with, looking at things that way. Yeah. We talked about in Yoga Sutra, Maitreya's six steps, and we talked about it in lots of times before that, right? Course 12? Yeah. So, to me, it's one of the sweetest teachings of all time, right? But anyway, Neki Gyu Ni Pangja, you have to get rid of the cause. Which means, according to Buddhism, to try to reason or to try to discuss it with a person who's causing you trouble at work just doesn't work. Trying to confront them or trying to reconcile with them, the two choices, right? Neither one works anyway. And that's proven by the fact that...
It doesn't always work.
Well, it don't always work, you know. This reconciliation doesn't always work, and confrontation doesn't always work, you know. Whenever you confront and it doesn't work, you think maybe reconciliation would have worked. Whenever you try reconciliation that doesn't work, you thought that maybe confronting would have worked. But the fact is that neither one is a cause. Neither one is addressing the cause. So it doesn't work. If you are having trouble with someone at work, the wisest thing would be to just try to be more kind to everybody, and specifically to the person you're having trouble with, which is the whole message of, say, Christianity. But it all got lost. You know, the whole idea is all mixed up, you know. But the idea is that it's not just to turn the other cheek because it's noble. It's that if you refuse to respond to violence with violence, you cut off future violence, like turning off the shower. So that's addressing the cause. You must eliminate the cause. Okay. And I also wanted to say, those of you who teach in Tucson, you gotta... I think it might be wise, Gail, to find out the background of the people coming and try to group them into... Like, have you taken two class courses, ACI or less? Have you taken 2 to 5? Have you, and try to group them, because how much foreign language you lay on people depends on... I mean, you need enough to impress them, and not so much that you confuse them and lose them. So, but then you could bore the ones who've been through a lot get bored if you don't throw it in. So you gotta, I think we might have to group them, people, because there'll be a wide variety. It's like teaching 5th grade to a senior in high school in the same group, you know. And so anyway, Gokten, means the truth of stopping it. They call it cessation. I don't like a word that long. Cessation. Well, it's not so long, but generally, it's not good to use long words in anything when you're explaining. But truth of cessation, truth of stopping the suffering, putting an end to the suffering. Gog means to stop. Den means the truth. Okay, and it says here. Let's see. Dene ni topcha. Say dene.
Ni
topcha.
De
means feel good. Ne means condition. Dene means health. Health. Ni means is. Topcha means something we want to attain, we want to get. Okay? You have to go after health if you're sick. You have to go after health if you're sick. In Buddhism, and I repeat, the goal is not to feel good for a while. The goal is not to be more calm for a while. The goal is not to be more friendly, just to be more friendly, you know. The goal is not to be able to cope with life better as it kills you, okay? And I keep repeating that probably till I die. And I just want to drill it in one more time. I mean, if we start a center in Tucson, for example, which we will, as we start this university, which we have, retreat center and other activities as we do the class, I mean, it has to be in the back of your mind that what you're offering people is the chance not to die. And then when I say that, sometimes friends look at me and they look at me like that. Sometimes I feel like a Christian preacher, and they're talking in metaphor. You know, like, yeah, you'll still get old and ugly and wrinkled and die. But after that, the Lord has something waiting for you, you know. That's not what we're talking about. I mean, and then sometimes when I say, oh, you can have eternal life, you know, people are like, they heard that before. But it is truly that you would transform. That with a gradual, patient, determined practice, culminating in a lot of retreat and a lot of study of the higher teachings, especially to do with your inner body, then you would actually change. Your whole being would change. And you would become a being who is not mortal. And then people ask me, well, would you just get more and more wrinkly, you know? And it's not like that. Your body changes into pure light. And that is the way we were meant to be. And that's the way Maitreya is. That's how the description goes after the dog popped out of sight for a sangha, which you're reading, you'll probably get sooner or later. I think we could send it possibly out by email or something, but I think I can maybe finish it by Sunday morning or something, but I don't know. The first reading, which is really nice. But the point is that you then are made of a different substance. You are made of light. And that's the goal. And that's why we work up from the 18 courses, then through the tantric courses, 18 tantric courses. And the goal is that you just change. So we want that kind of health. That's the goal. And you're going to see a very beautiful quotation by Maitreya Saturday? Yeah. Where he states that, again, very clearly, and I like it. It's a very famous quotation in the debate ground. Pape Chida Nawadam. People who have seen emptiness have cut off from its root the source of death. And I like that. You don't see it. It gets lost in modern Buddhist presentations, I think. I mean, even if the presentation is Tibetan Buddhist, even if it's founded in the traditional scriptures, you don't actually hear people saying, look, if you really work on this hard, your body will change into light and you don't have to work. That's the end of the process. And then you can serve all living beings automatically, spontaneously. I think it's important to keep repeating it to people. Say Lamden.
Lamden.
Lam means path. Den means truth of the path. Truth of the path to the end of suffering. I mean, and the most important one is just the direct perception of emptiness. That is the classic Lamden. Okay? That is the classic Lamden. Say Menni.
Menni.
Denja.
Denja.
Menni.
Menni.
Denja.
Denja.
Men means, do you know? Huh? Medicine.
Medicine.
Okay? Like Menla house, right? Okay? Ni means is. This spelling with the sa head letter, those of you who are studying Tibetan, which is unusual, means to be relied upon or to be used. Like medicine or food or a lama, the same verb, to be relied upon. In this case, to be taken, you have to take the medicine. Okay. So to go over the four parts of his sickness metaphor, what's the first part? You gotta get it that you're sick. Okay. How many people do you know who have a serious disease who just refuse to admit it? You know, like, oh, I'll be all right. The funniest thing, I mean, the saddest thing you hear is, I'll fight this thing. Come on, what are you talking about, fight this thing? You know, what are you gonna do? You know? You're going to shell out money to any kind of crazy cure you can, and then you're going to die anyway. You know, that's a... it drives me crazy when I hear people, oh, I'm going to fight this thing, you know? I got cancer. So maybe you better study hard, meditate hard. I'll fight this thing, you know? Come on. What's it mean, you know? Second.
Everything comes from the source.
No, but what was the statement? Maitreya said, you got to...
You must eliminate cut off causes.
You got to cut it off. You got to turn it off. Turn off the source, at the source. Okay? Gets to be a certain point in an illness that it's too late. Okay? Even if you took yourself to His Holiness and He said, okay, I'll give up all my other work and I'll just teach you. And you went to Dharamsala and His Holiness said, oh, don't worry. I'll take care of it. You got cancer, okay? Just do what I say. You know, do this meditation, Lam Rim. Then take these vows. Then get these initiations. Then go through these visualizations. Then achieve that in your real life. Then do this Dzogchen stuff. And then work on your inner channels, inner chakras. And then, you know, I can take care of you. It's too late. It's too late. You know, I mean, even if you had this Holiness there and He had nothing else to do, it's too late. It's just too late. So you've got to cut it off at the source. Third one? Yeah?
Feel good. Reach your 10.
Yeah, get health. Get health. Get healthy. Get healthy. How? Yeah, take the medicine. Okay, so it goes in a flow like that. You got to understand you're sick. Come on. You got to understand something terrible is happening. Okay? Every moment of your life. Then you have to figure out what's causing it. Then you have to get health, and you have to find out how to do that. You have to take the medicine. Okay. And the process is long and hard. And you have to start. And you have to put some hard work into it. I was reading the statements by the retreatants to the newspaper reporter, and it was all like, I just figured out I'm just starting. You know, after 3 years I decided I've got a good start, you know. And it's like that. It's hard. It's hard. You have to work hard. Okay. Now the point is about, the reason we brought this up is that this Arya Truth of the path and this Arya Truth of shutting off the shower, turning off the shower, what do you call that thing? Knob? Faucet. Shutting off the faucet. And this one, Lamden. How to shut up. You know, reach out and turn your hand. Okay. The way and the cutting it off. Those two are the Dharma jewel. Those two in the mind of a person who has seen emptiness directly are the Dharma jewel. That is the Dharma jewel. Okay. And hopefully if they're bodhisattva, it'd be good too. Throw that in. Okay? All right? Those two are the Dharma jewel. Now I got a question for you. Maybe Earl. Which one comes first? Gokden or Lamden?
Lamden.
Yeah. I mean, normally you practice the path and then?
The results.
Yeah. How about if I ask you, which comes first, Buddha jewel or Dharma jewel? Especially in our context here, of the seven diamond visions, right? In this context, of Earl the Future Buddha. And by the way, they won't call you Earl, that's another story. But your Buddhahood and your Buddha jewel, the Buddha jewel that you will be if you're not already, and the Buddha jewel that, the Dharma jewel that you will attain if you haven't already, which comes first? Why? That's nice. That's nice. That's not bad. That's not a bad answer. But do you become the Buddha jewel when you see emptiness directly?
No.
Yeah. That's the only jewel you don't become when you see emptiness directly, right? You become the other two. So if I want to say, in which order do you become the Buddha jewel and the Dharma jewel? Which comes first? When you become it.
The Dharma jewel and the Dharma jewel.
Yeah. You become Dharma jewel first at path of seeing, right? Or at least you attain it in your mind. The path, which is the direct perception of emptiness, and cessations. But do you attain cessations when you see emptiness directly?
Yes.
Like what? Cessation of what?
Doubt.
Yeah, you can't doubt the path ever again. And mainly one other one.
Believing
in self-existent things intellectually. Okay? So you do achieve a truth of cessation and a truth of the path. They come first. And then later, much later, you become the Buddha jewel, right? Fully enlightened being. Now let's take it from the point of view of... that's tough. But in terms of the... We talked about the Dharma jewel, your Earl's Dharma jewel, in terms of the Dharma teachings you would give after you became enlightened, right? We talked of it that way. We talked about it in terms of bodhicitta. The first three diamond-like visions can be explained in terms of bodhicitta. How? Why? That's true. But there's a process there, which is what? I want to, so I can create other Sangha jewels. Right? In that case, which comes first? If you say, I want to become a fully enlightened being, so I can read everybody's minds and know exactly what to teach them, so that I can most quickly lead them to see emptiness directly. Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. In that case, which comes first? Your own, you become a Buddha first. So Buddha jewel comes first, then you speak Dharma jewel, and then you create a Sangha of people who have seen emptiness directly because of Earl's teachings as a Buddha. Okay. Gelsub Jay says, you can think of it that way. You know, if someone comes up to you and asks you which comes first, Buddha jewel, Dharma jewel, Sangha jewel, you can say, well, in terms of progression of what I'd like to see happen, which is the bodhicitta part, I'd like to become enlightened so I can give my own fantastic teaching, sutra and tantra, in the world that I'm dealing with, planets that I'm on, so that people can become Sangha jewel. They can see emptiness directly. But now, Earl, we're not done yet. But if you define the Dharma jewel as the ultimate cessation, truth of cessation, and the ultimate truth of the path in a being's mind, in your own mind, then which comes first? Buddha jewel or Dharma jewel?
Dharma.
Yeah, the ultimate version of these two truths in Earl's mind is going to happen when? Ultimate version.
Of the Dharma jewel?
Yeah, which means cessation, which means got rid of every problem, everything. At Buddhahood. So which comes first? Buddha jewel or Dharma jewel? Gelsub Jay is very concerned about this. He says, from a developmental point of view, I want to become a Buddha, then later I'll be able to teach, and then later people will get to see emptiness because of me. But if you think of Dharma jewel as the path and the cessations in your own mind, which is the real Dharma jewel, right? The ultimate version of that. Which comes first, Buddha jewel or Dharma jewel?
Neither.
Yeah, neither. It comes simultaneously. Okay. Then Gelsub Jay says, it's like saying, and it comes all across better in Tibetan and Sanskrit than it does in English, but here we go. Opening her mouth, she sleeps. Opening her mouth, she sleeps. Okay. Which came first? Opening her mouth or sleeping? In Tibetan, it's dada da ne Ka dang ne niao. Ka dang ne niao. And there's a trick with the ne, which is a big deal in Sanskrit and Tibetan grammar. It means, it can mean, first she yawned, and then she fell asleep. See? Opening her mouth, she slept. Okay? But it could just mean, she sleeps with, you know, she sleeps with her mouth open. Okay? You see what I mean? And he says that's a good metaphor for how people understand this process. Like if you say, opening her mouth, she sleeps, maybe 75% of people will take it as, she yawned, so she went to bed. But then the 25% will get it. She was sleeping with her mouth open. Meaning, most people think in terms of progression. Buddha, I'm going to get enlightened so I can teach the Dharma. Is that the Dharma jewel? Deceptive Dharma. Who said that? Alistair. Winston. It's the fake Dharma jewel. It's the apparent Dharma jewel. That's not the real Dharma. Okay? Talking, words, books, not the real Dharma. Right? So that's you can say that kind of order, but it's not really so relevant. What's the real Dharma jewel? Yeah. It's realizations in your own mind and the permanent getting rid of bad stuff in your own being that you achieve because of those realizations called truth of cessation. Okay? So, don't think of truth of cessation just in terms of not dying. It also means like there's a place even before, when you understand emptiness fairly well, at the second path, path of preparation, there comes a point at which you can no longer what? Impossible to take a birth in the lower realms. I mean, if nothing else matters in this life, you should just kick ass on the ACI courses and try to get to the intellectual understanding of emptiness that would get you over that level. Then you can sort of relax a bit. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to be in the hell realms anymore. Just impossible. I'm not going to the hell realms. I'm not going to an animal realm. Like, you can be nervous when you die. You know, you might be born in this country or this planet or that planet, but you know you're not going to be born in a bad place. You know you're not going to be really born in a really hellish place. We saw, what was that? Our first DVD on our computer, which is why everyone's so grumpy because they stayed up late. It was Matrix, Matrix cartoons or something like that. I don't know. But there was one of these horrible beings coming up, like billions and billions out of this hell plateau, and there you could see like a funnel coming up. And that's what the hell realms look like. Like the guy who did that animation was calling on a seed in his own mind for something he has experienced countless times. It's not just some stupid thing that somebody made up. It's he's drawing, he's siphoning images out of actual experiences that he went through countless times. And when you see a movie, once you know everything, you know, you can see former life images coming up in people, animators' minds as they think they're creating. But they're just linking into some experience they've had countless times, and they are able to render it with great accuracy. I think it's the third one, if you're interested. The third little cartoon. But anyway, you won't have to go through like something like that if you achieve a Gokten. If you achieve a Gokten. If you just get to a certain level of understanding that all the problems you run into in the world are coming from me. You know? And it's weird, you know, we can be a group of us sitting around all afternoon working together and we're all just losing that understanding constantly. You know? Like minor irritation at another person. And you're just losing it. You're just losing it. You're thinking, oh, other person, other person, other person. They irritate me. They're doing something to me, you know. Like, even in a group of people who have been through it for 10, 15 years, you know, all of us, in an afternoon, we're like interacting, and then there's this 98% level of them, you know. It's not like it's me who's caused all this, you know. And if you can get past that, at a certain intellectual level, then you don't have to start, you don't have to go to a lower realm anymore. You can die peacefully. You know what I mean? So you can practice it anytime, anywhere. Be better to have a difficult place to practice it, You know, like this is a little not very conducive place because everyone's practicing. You know what I mean? You mean, ideally it would be to have some place where people didn't know anything about that, and then they really attack you nicely and bother you nicely, and there's no hint of maybe it's our fault. You know what I mean? That would be the best place to stay, I think. We'll still build Diamond Mountain. It'll help a few people. I wanted to talk about the truth of cessation in a little bit of detail. Okay, stopping, shutting it off, reaching out, and no, that's just turning off the faucet, right? Turning off the faucet. And it has two parts. What I wanted to say, it has the two same parts as we talked about with the body of a Buddha, with the essence body of a Buddha. Those of you who had a discussion with someone else about the class probably remember this, okay? Because it was two of the qualities on the taking care of yourself side, which were what?
Natural and achieved purity.
Yeah, nice. Natural and achieved purity. If you take the essence body of a Buddha, of the Dharmakaya, you could divide it into the part which has always been pure by nature, natural purity. And then there's the part which has become pure through a process. Okay? And we're going to have that same division with this. Okay? With this truth of cessation. Okay? And again, the natural purity just has to do with your natural emptiness, the emptiness that you've always had. Okay? Emptiness. Achieved purity in this sense has a little bit different meaning, and I'm going to go through that. I'm sorry. He's got three qualities of natural purity, so I'm going to give you those. Okay? Three qualities of natural purity. Gyaltsub Jay, it's in a verse by Maitreya, and Gyaltsub Jay is depending on a Sangha's commentary, and he's taking it out for us and breaking it out, because you can't see it in the entire tantra. It's the entire tantra would just have code words, and then if you read the Master Sangha's commentary, you get the meaning, and then Gyaltsub Jay is clarifying it further, and then our textbook writers from each of the great monasteries turned it into a pedagogical presentation, you know, which is very powerful. And I'm hoping to do some of that when we get to Rick, especially, come. When we get to come, I think I'll throw in like six or seven debates from the... Because that's how you really understand it. If you understand the debate, you understand Gyaltsub Jay, then you can understand the Arya Sangha, then you can understand Maitreya. And it really goes like that. Number one. Dird Parashana Shakya Ek Atmat Ev Asmita. Say Dird Darshana Shakya Ek Atmat Ev Asmita. Yoga Sutra. Okay. Dualism is at the root of all the problems. Okay. And it doesn't mean what, Alistair? Dualism. Yeah, it doesn't mean that. Okay? It doesn't mean that somehow you melt into the popcorn that you're looking at. Okay? It doesn't mean that. And there is a human urge. There's an urge within the human being to overcome discursive thought. You know? Like I spoke to a heroin addict in New York one time. And I said, you know, and he was like very apologetic for being a heroin addict. And I said, it's not my business, but I'm curious why. You know, what drives you to take it? You know, and he says, if I could just stop the thoughts in my own mind, that's all I want. You know, like what you get during sleep, the kind of refreshing you get during sleep, I never get that. I can't get it, even when I'm asleep. So I use heroin to try to shut up my mind. So that's all. That's all and it works for like a couple of hours, and then it comes back again, you know. But he said, just that feeling of having your own thoughts shut up. And you know, if you spend 3 years in a yurt, you know the same thing, you know. You can sit there hour after hour and hour, and you're like trying to shut up your goddamn mind, you know? Like you're like this, you know? And it's like singing advertising jingles from when you were in sixth grade, you know? Uh-oh, SpaghettiOs, you know? You're like this, you know? And you're like, and the longer you're in retreat, the earlier it goes back. The mind goes back further and further. And then you're like hearing these idiotic things from first, second grade, you know? And you're like, and you can't stop it, you know? So there's this human urge to stop this dual feeling of being separate. But that's not how it works. I mean, that's not how it works. And it's not that you can shut the mind off. You can't. You know, it never turns off. After you get enlightened, the mind continues, right? It's just pleasant. Okay. So, what does this dualism mean, Debbie Bhai? Give me a nice mind-only answer. Me and the pen are not dual because, yeah. Essentially, it's one part of the mind. I'm looking at something which I'm projecting. We came from the same karmic seed, right? Yeah, we came from the same karmic seed. Zetade. Rangshigimadute, right? That's a pretty good mind-only answer, okay? I'm not separate from the pen because we are being driven. We're being spewed forth from the same karmic seed. Me, the observer, and the observed thing are being spewed forth from the same karmic seed. Is there any problem with that presentation? Why do we say it's mind-only presentation? Only one problem, really. It's not much of a problem.
Because you're considering the seed that is coming from itself.
Yeah. There's this storehouse consciousness. It's where the seed lies. It's spewing forth me and the pen. To look at the pen. And then how do I think about that projector? Do I take the projector as being self-existent? We talked about that. That's the only problem they have. That's like somehow they get it about me and the pen, but they feel different about where it's all coming from.
So that's material substance. You
know? Yeah, what they call materiality. And that's a good point because it doesn't sound like what it means. Did they think that this is your mind and is that why they're called mind only? No. Okay. You guys are no fun. I gotta find new stuff. Cannot be perceived by a mind that still has dualism, okay? Like, if you don't overcome thinking that the irritating people you met this afternoon are coming from you, you will never see emptiness directly. You will never see natural purity of the truth of cessation directly. That's all. Can't. You can't. Okay? You have to at least get over that intellectual thing that those people who bother me are coming from, or the stress that comes to me is coming from the outside. It's coming from you. Okay. If you can't get beyond that, you won't see the natural purity. Okay. Second one, cannot be perceived through another. And it's the same thing we talked about with the... Kenshin Ki Togmin. Yeah. And other meant two things, remember? Give me one. Don't be a virtue hog.
Descriptive thought and persons.
Okay.
Oh, sorry, I wasn't
We used to have fights over bills in the restaurants and checks in the restaurant in New York, and the virtue pig would get it and run to the cashier and pay, and the other person wouldn't get a chance to feed Dharma brother or sister. And anyway, cannot be perceived through another, meaning another can either mean discursive perceptions, you know, reasoning. Directly, right? Directly. Through words and concepts, you cannot perceive natural purity directly. So through another, meaning through other ways of thinking other than what kind of perception?
Direct
perception, okay? Which means logical perceptions based on authority. We talked about them in one of those quiet retreat teachings. Was it? Pratipakshanumanagama. Pramanani. Pramanani. Okay. Yeah. It's the same thing, really. It's the same thing. Okay? Can't be perceived through other ways of perception, meaning words and ideas. and can't be perceived through the directions, through the direct directions of another person. A person who's seen emptiness, no matter how much they may wish to convey it to you, can only take you through the process which would cause you to see it yourself, and cannot, in a 15-minute description of what they saw, make you see it. Okay? Or we wouldn't be here. Okay. Number three. Is it different from one? Who said? Is it different from one? Is it?
One says it can't be perceived by a mind that still has dualism.
Right.
Three says it can be perceived only by a mind that is free of dualism.
Right. Now there's two ways you could handle this in the debate ground, right? Somebody says, number one and number three amount to the same thing, don't they?
Yeah.
You say yin, yin. Okay, since you bit. Pungsumba mewata. You say, ninangi lo yina, ninangi lo mayina, ninangi lo dentawa yin pichavata. If something is a mind which is free of duality, if you get rid of duality, do you get to the mind which is free of duality? Meaning, which perceives emptiness directly, right? Which is to say, are there any states of mind other than?
Lots
of things. Pungsumba yalata. So there are other stuff? Pansabangyang mayimata. So they are not in a, what do they call it? Exclusive contradictory. What do they call it?
Mutually
exclusive contradiction. Meaning if you get rid of one and you get rid of the other, there's nothing left in the universe. You see what I mean? Is that the case with these two, with one and three? Yeah. Yeah, right. That's what Gyaltsa Dey would say. There's lots of things that are not dualism, which are not free of dualism. The state of mind free of dualism. You see what I mean? But it could be a great debate for a couple hours. Yeah, you could say that. Maybe. Okay, anyway. The point here, I think he's tending more towards direct perception of emptiness. You know, it's one thing to say you can't see it if you are still thinking of the person who upset you this afternoon as being produced outside of you. It's another thing to see directly their emptiness. Okay, that's a big difference. You see what I mean? I think that's more what he's getting at. I think that's more what he's getting at. Because otherwise I think it would be sort of redundant. And he's not a kind of person to be redundant. He relates these to the root text, and you'll see that in the reading. Okay? He relates these to a section in the Uttara Tantra that you will see in the reading when you get it. Okay. I'm going to stop there for a break. And then after that, we're going to discuss. We got one more purity to cover. What's that? Achieve purity. Which is kind of the more interesting one, right? I mean, what is the process we go through to reach a truth of cessation, which is the purity that we will be in the end, the purity that we will get to through the whole Buddhist practice? You know, what exactly are the steps that we go through to get there, okay, to achieve purity? And that's all we're going to do tonight. So have a nice break, relax. Maybe get some fresh air because it's a little stuffy in here. I'm just going to do it in Sanskrit for good luck. And then Christy Lau will go over it if you're feeling ambitious. Say yo.
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 Nasan.
Nachasan.
Nachapi.
Nachapi.
Sadasan.
Sadasan.
Nanya.
Sato.
Sato.
Nasato.
Shakyas.
Shakyas.
Tarkayitum.
Tarkayitum.
Niruktya.
Niruktya.
Pagata.
Pagata.
Patyat.
Say,
Pratyatma,
Vedya,
Shiva,
Tasmai,
Dharma Div Karaya,
Vimala,
Jnana.
Yeah?
Jnana, okay.
Avaba,
Sadvishe,
Sarvalambanara,
Sorry, Ragados. Dosha.
Dosha.
Atamir.
Atamir.
Avya.
Avya.
Katakartre.
Katakartre.
Nama.
Nama.
Sorry. Here's the Tibetan, which is a little better. It's really weird in the... Okay. I'll just say it. You don't have to say it. Kangshik me min yumin yome mayin yume le shenduang. I bow down to the sun in the sky. Okay. Which is neither that, which neither doesn't exist, nor exists, nor both does exist and doesn't exist, nor is anything other than those two. Okay, I bow down to the sun in the sky, which neither exists, doesn't exist, both does exist and doesn't exist, or neither doesn't exist, nor neither does exist nor doesn't exist. And so is beyond thinking about. Tapa minu. Ngetik dandel means you can't talk about it. Soso rangi rik. It must be known by yourself, individually. Shiva, which in Sanskrit is Shiva. Peace. So that's, you asked, and Jim asked, that's where he got the three. That's where he got the three, okay? Three qualities to do with the natural cessation. And I'll say them again. I'll pull them out, and you'll see them. You'll recognize them. That which is neither not existent or existent, or both or neither, and so therefore is beyond all
dualism.
Thinking about. Yeah, that's the cannot be perceived by a mind that is still stuck in dualism. That's where Gyaltsev J got that. That's where Gyaltsev J got that. I'll say it again. In this verse from the Uttara Tantra, in which he's bowing down to the Dharma jewel, which he compares to the sun, right? He says, that thing which is neither non-existent nor existent nor both nor neither. I bow down to that because it's beyond all thinking. Okay, so that's where Gyaltsev J got the... What was it? Cannot be perceived by a mind with dualism. It still has dualism. What was the next one?
Cannot be perceived by another.
Yeah, and he says here, Ngetik Dandel, which means beyond words, beyond definite words, beyond description. Okay? That's where Gyaltsev J got that one. Soso Rangi Rik must be perceived individually. So we had the Eva. Dursatyasmasya tadevarta dursasyatma tad arta eva dursasyatma can only be perceived by the person at the path of seeing. That's from the Yoga Sutra. I think he was heavily linked into Patanjali or vice versa. That's why I think Patanjali's dates are about Master Sangha's dates. I think these whole things were spreading in India like crazy at that very moment. And they're almost like parallel texts running, if you really look at them. To me, that's kind of exciting. Anyway, Soso Rangi Rik. But what could the individual also mean? Known individually. Do you know? Soso Tangok, Soso Tamengi Gopa. Somebody said they were having trouble explaining this to... Who said they looked it up in a book? What was that? Somebody said they were teaching Abhidharma and they had to look it up because I didn't explain the difference. In the Abhidharma, there are two kinds of cessation. Soso Tangok and Soso Tamengi Gopa. Soso Tangok means a cessation which is a result of individual perceptions. And Soso Tamengi Gopa means a cessation which is a result without an individual perception. And then it says the individual perception means the 16 aspects of the four Arya truths. So when they say individually known, it's a code word for seeing emptiness directly at the path of seeing and the aftermath that I think Mercedes talked about, what we call the aftermath, the hours following that perception. So he says, can only be known individually, meaning that individual means by someone who has gone through the individual parts of the noble truths and understands them. So that covers the third one, which is... So that's where he got the third one, okay? And then Shiva, it's peace. It's peace. Shiva in Sanskrit. And it means natural peace, natural nirvana, emptiness, okay? Now he gets the three qualities of the achieved purity, the purity that you develop over the length of your Buddhist practice. Here's how he describes it. Time, it's without stain. Yeshi Wezer Dangden, it possesses the light rays of wisdom. Mikpakun La Chakpadang, it has to do with removing your attachment towards all objects. Oops. Dangdang Rabde Number Jom. It destroys that attachment, and it destroys anger, and it destroys ignorance. The darkness of ignorance. And that's why he compares this whole Dharma jewel thing, especially the truth of cessation, which is what this verse is about, he compares it to what? The sun. He says, I bow down to the sun. Wisdom. Because it destroys these liking things in a bad way, disliking things in a bad way, and ignorance itself, which you can get over if you have knowledge, especially of that which has no stain. What's he talking about? I mean, let's break that part down. The last two lines in which he's bowing down to the sun are about the achieved purity. The achieved purity. And he says, look, if you want to get to absolute purity, you're going to have to, let's think it would take about six steps. You want to get out of the self-perpetuating cycle. Returning violence with violence and creating more violence in the future. You want to get out of that self-perpetuating cycle. So you would have to stop collecting karma. Which itself, you know, actions, ignorant actions, are motivated by those three, well, you could say liking things and disliking things in an ignorant way. And this is the big selling point. Now, if I got some new poor Tucsonian in my breakout session, and I wanted to sell him the Dharma, you know, it would be, this is the key. This is the key. You know, is it wrong to dislike what, did I, if you had an irritating person this afternoon, if someone irritated you this afternoon, is it wrong to dislike that? Well, natural is a different thing. It's certainly natural. But is it wrong to dislike that?
No.
Not at all. And that's not Buddhism. That's not Buddhism. You're not supposed to sit there while the World Trade Center is falling down on your head and say, oh, equanimity. You know? It's not Buddhism. It's not Buddhism. You know? I mean, forget that. And it's a very wrong presentation of Buddhism. It's very, very wrong because it cheats people out of the real thing, you know. It's not some kind of equanimity in the face of life, which is very painful and distasteful, and people who are really irritating. That's not the point. The point is that it's okay to dislike them. You should dislike them. You should dislike the World Trade Center falling on your head. You should dislike a person who makes you irritated, Dharma brother and sister even, in this very room, 10 minutes ago maybe. That's fine. They irritate you. They're irritating. That's real. That's not unreal. But ignorantly, no. Ignorantly, no. Okay. What's the difference between ignorant liking and intelligent disliking? With regard to an irritating person. Yeah. You made it. You're making it as, well, not making it as it happens, but you made it. And if you respond to them negatively, then you could perpetuate them. You perpetuate them. Are irritating people irritating? Yes. Are they empty? Yes. Are they an illusion? Yes. Are they real? Yes. Do they really irritate? Yes. Okay? That's what Buddhism says. But it's coming from a seed that you planted. So how the only way to get rid of them is to stop planting those seeds. Does it make them disappear or change in the next half hour?
No.
Okay. Can you see the connection directly? No. And that's the pain of the world. Can you see that by being irritated at someone this afternoon, you created 1,000 more? You can't see it. It's invisible. You have to take Buddha's word. You have to establish Buddha as a truthful person. And then you have to establish that it's logical. The whole process of planting seeds through perceptual processes and then having that affect how you perceive things or even create things that you perceive is very logical, but you have to go through the process logically. Okay? So stop liking and disliking ignorantly, because when you believe that the irritating person who's really irritating didn't come from you, then you fight with them. Then you do something irritating to them, and then the whole cycle keeps going. How can you stop that? Stop thinking about things wrong way, which just means stop thinking that they are irritating from their own side. And then, you know, if you're in a really good class and you're having a good time and your breakout group happens to be really smart and not irritating, you can also slip in a little tantra. You know, you can say, which means in theory that if your spiritual development reached a certain place, the very people that you now see as irritating, you might see as divine beings trying to help you. I mean, and it wouldn't be forced. You know, it wouldn't be like, you know, yeah, they're really a divine being trying to help me. Probably. You know, I mean, you know, I mean, it's not like that. Just boom, you know, you're like, wow, they're trying to help me. I'm sorry, you know, and thank you, you know, and like that. Big difference, right? One is a result of a little study. The second one is a result of keeping your book, you know, just refusing to collect bad karma. And then you're like, wow, boom, I'm surrounded by these holy beings. Wow, you know. Okay, number two. You could stop that if you stopped the general tendency of seeing things as self-existent, right? The general tendency of seeing things as self-existent, which seems to have been activated in our brains the moment we were born or conceived. It seems that this is activated just by being conceived. You know, boom, you have it. The moment you're in your mother's womb, first moment of conception, you have it already. Which leads us to assume that you'd have to stop. You have to stop the seeds for that tendency that came with you when you were born. That were part of you when you were born, installed in the factory. Factory installed. Seeds, right? Which all comes back to this. I mean, it all comes back. It comes down to here. Right? You stop number three. This is intellectual, right? This is intellectual process. This is the Prajnaparamita. This is the perfection of wisdom. Buddhism says that you can get out of the disease through sheer understanding. You know? Like, if given choice of virtuous things to do in a day, sincerely, you should work on the ones that address your understanding. Because that's where you can break it. I mean, in the end, the process is an intellectual one. And I don't mean philosophers sitting around with books and stuff like that. I mean the raw power of grasping that you made that irritating person. You know, that's the only thing that can save us. The raw power of understanding. I think maybe better than saying intellect. The raw power of grasping what's really going on is the only thing that can save us. And that comes here. So if you stop the habit, you know, every time you get in a situation where someone's irritating you, if you just stop the habit of thinking about them as coming from their side, then slowly you destroy these two. So Gyaltsab J says, he covers this whole six steps in a section called How We Get in Trouble. Korla Jukpe Rinpa. Say Korla
Jukpe
Rinpa. The steps by which we get stuck in the self-perpetuating cycle. Okay? Samsara. But he presents it in the section where he's talking about the Dharma jewel, and he's talking about the cessation, the truth of cessation in the Dharma jewel, and the part where he's not talking about natural purity. Michael is talking about achieved purity. Okay, that's where these six steps come up in the Uttara Tantra. That's why these six steps come up in the Uttara Tantra. I'll say it again. Out. He says, these describe how we get in trouble. Korala Jukpe Rinpa. The steps by which we get in trouble. But he brings that up because these are the steps that you have to stop. Backwards way. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Right? In order to achieve purity. Which is half of the Dharma jewel. Half of the truth of cessation, which is half of the Dharma jewel in your own mind. Because the truth of the Dharma jewel consists of the truth of cessation and the truth of the path. Right? So I'm sorry. So really this is part of the truth of cessation. Cessation can be discussed in terms of natural purity or achieved purity. And this is obviously
achieved,
because you gotta go through these steps. You gotta go, first you have to do this, then you have to do that, then you have to do that, then you have to do that, and then you have to do that. So now you guys know, this being the in-depth course, where the six steps came for course 12, and what was the other course? All of them, yeah. I mean, it gets in there somewhere, right? But we said it was a commentary on the Uttara Tantra that it came from. And now you know why. Okay? Now you know how.
Course 12, this came from the Uttara Tantra.
Course 12. Yeah. This is where it comes from. This is where exactly where, and that's the context in which it comes. So it's really cool, later when you teach course 12, to people, you know, if you have an extra day in South Africa, right, you can say, well, you want to know where those six came from? And then you can jump over to Uttara Tantra and say, this is where they came from. You know, and that's the verse where he bows down to the sun. You'll get the verse when you get the reading. I think you'll get a big stack of readings when I get back in August. I mean, the Tibetan's already laid out, but I haven't had time to work on it, translate it. But now you know exactly where the six steps come from. And you know the very verse. It might be fun when you get the reading to try to suck it out of the verse. The two, last two lines of the verse. Okay? So that's a extra job you have to do. I think I finished all the homework. Let me see. Yeah. And the meditation assignment. Is everybody talking over with somebody between classes? Yeah? It's something to do when you're banging on things and like that. Your head. Okay. Meditation assignment. 15 minutes analytical meditation. Think of the one thing or person which gives you the most trouble in your life and how you might apply the six steps just mentioned in stopping this problem. Okay. For me, that's a real natural meditation. Yeah. And by the way, excuse me, that's worldview. I mean, that's why we call this whole organization worldview. That is worldview. Yeah, that's what you do. My book nowadays has gotten down to plus blah blah blah, minus blah blah blah, do worldview. I just put WV. There's nothing else to do. That's all you have to do, really. Right? What are you going to say?
Well, now that you said that.
No, go ahead.
So about step 4, you said it was okay to dislike things, but not okay
to dislike them ignorantly.
Or be irritated. But if you're disliking things, then...
The theory is that you can't be irritated if you dislike it intelligently. Impossible.
But do you have to see emptiness directly?
No.
Just a strong intellectual.
Strong intellectual. Or it couldn't be that you could achieve a cessation for the lower realms by an intellectual understanding of emptiness. You can.
So that physical irritation actually can go away just through an intellectual.
Yeah, emotion. Yeah. I mean, when I was deep in the retreat, it dawned on me one day, and I lost it since then, right? But so many things. But one was that there's no reason not to be joyful all the time. Technically. You know what I mean? I mean, technically, there's no reason to be less than very happy all the time, because it doesn't help anything. It doesn't do anything. You know, I mean, it's true that we live in a bad situation. It's true that we have things around us all day that we'd rather not have around us. But it's not true that there's any benefit to being irritated by them, because then you can't think straight, and you might as well just be happy. And then you can deal with, you can do the opposite. We have a thing we call opposite day. It comes from some movie? What?
It's a song.
Oh. But there was also, I don't know, some movie. I don't know. There's just a day when you do the opposite of what you'd want naturally do all day long. And if somebody, for example, were hassling you, you know, or even, let's say, if you had problems in your group with divisiveness, then the only logical thing to do would be very happy and never do that kind of thing yourself. You know, like take extra steps to be, to reach out to other people and other groups and not be divisive, rather than going to the opposite party and trying to talk them into either blah, blah, or blah, blah. Reconcile or confront. That's not the solution, really. Well, partly the reconcile might do it if you did it with wisdom. If you said, I'm taking this step so that 6 months from now I don't see divisiveness. You know, and you're not trying to work with hard cement. You know, but going and trying to talk to both parties is like hard cement. And don't expect a lot from that. Unless you see it as applying to future karma. Future karma. Yeah. Anyway, that's worldview. And to me, I mean, that's Buddhism in a nutshell. That's all we have to do. You know, stop robo-clawing and start gardening. Right? Okay. Hard to do, easy to say. You ready? We'll do some prayers. Okay. See you on... tomorrow. Yeah. But some months, what's on Saturday? Saturday we're going to do the Sangha. Sangha Jo. Okay. Yeah, Michael.
Quickly, the three qualities of achieved purity. I've got premate, and then with the other two, possesses light rays of wisdom, and removing all attachment to objects of senses. Are those the three?
Good question. If you really want to know.
It's in the reading.
It's in the reading. Let's just say it's in the reading. It is in the reading. Okay. Dagmeng unse dutobe shirab ni dupe saben chirikpe tima mepo. The wisdom which perceives emptiness directly is unstained. That's the first one, right? In the sense that it's getting free of certain seeds for obstacles. Here's number two. Dekona ni unse dutobe yeshiki uzerki nangwa dandembo. Aryas, people who have seen emptiness directly, are possessed of the wisdom which perceives emptiness directly, those sun ray lights. Sun rays? And Gyaltsen J makes a point. He says, I'm not just saying that the truth of the path is the direct perception of emptiness. I also want to point out that the Jetob Yeshi, the wisdom of the hours after that experience, also account for these light rays. The wisdom of the light rays of the sun. The light rays of the sun.
It's a metaphor.
Yeah, so that's number two.
Aryas are...
they possess...
the wisdom that sees emptiness like the sun is possessed by light rays.
Like that, yeah. Yeah, in the end... then there's this huge debate, Michael, if you want to get into it. Are the light rays separate from the sun? Are they coming out of the sun? Are they? I mean, is the sun independent of the light rays? Or that's another question. Anyway, in the end... it's the wisdom which perceives emptiness directly, which destroys the darkness, right? And that's why he calls it the sun. Okay, third one. Sula sobe yugi mikba kunla dubar dotagne. This is this whole thing where he gets in the six steps, okay? With really the last one, which was what? Oh, yeah, it was like, you take all the objects in your life, like things you can see. You have some feeling that they must be pleasant or unpleasant from their own side. You are looking at them in the wrong way. You start to get attachment like or dislike, which is not a real like or dislike, is it? And then if you took the opposite of that, which is thinking of them the right way, that you've made these things that irritate you, right? Then we could compare you to the sun of the holy Dharma, which destroys the darkness that lies at the root of ignorant liking and disliking. And I would bow down to that sun if I were Maitreya, he says. Okay? That's how he glosses the three. So the third one is that whole stuff together. Yeah, yeah. Which is really beautiful. So the six are really in the third one. Yeah. Okay, cool. I'll do a prayer. So the real trick is to, you got to be in this mood for the next few months of thinking, how do I present this to a new person that walks in? You know, like you don't want to dump all this, you don't want to overwhelm them. And that's the tendency for people who just got a big dose of Vritara Tantra, you know, like you want to tell them everything and you want to tell them all the details and then they'll just glaze if they're new, you know. So your task for the next few months is to really absorb this so well that you can regurgitate it in a normal conversation in normal English in a way that would be easily accessible to a normal person. And that's a big skill. That's a very difficult thing. And you do a much greater virtue if you convey it to them in a way that they can absorb immediately than if you give them all the details. You know, it's good to have the details behind it if they ask, but you have to be in this mode in the next few months. Of, like I just go to bed at night or I wake up in the morning. I don't get out of bed. I just sit there and think, how would I tell this to a normal person, you know? And then do that. Like, you know, just before you fall to sleep, think, how would I teach this verse to a normal person? And then you'll be really in the right mood when it comes time. Then the right things, the right words will come. And it may not at all be like the technical presentation of, you know, all the Sanskrit and Tibetan and blah, blah, blah. Okay. All right. Good night.